time once again for Community Forum, and we are very lucky to have with us live in the studios this morning Jarvis Kapaushan, Tracy Arendt, George Sidwell, and Elizabeth Mulpan. Jarvis Kapaushan and Tracy Arendt are with Share Wheel Tent City 3. Elizabeth Mulpan is the outreach coordinator of the Safe Parking Community Network, and George Sidwell is a former resident of Nicholsville and currently a Real Change vendor. Jarvis, Tracy, George, and Elizabeth, thank you all for coming and spending time with us this morning.
Thanks
for having us.
To be here. Thanks, Mike.
All right, so let's start out with Jarvis, you and Tracy. Can you tell us a little bit about Share Wheel and Tent City 3?
Good morning, and again, thanks for having us here. Share Wheels Tent City 3, I have lived there since 2010. You know, Share, Seattle Housing and Resource Effort, and Wheel Women's Equality and Enhancement League. You know, it's been around for 20 years now. Tent City 3 is a roving encampment. It's a community for up to 100 people. You know, it's basically living together for safety and survival. Share also operates 16 indoor shelters. We are the largest network shelter provider in the Northwest region. And besides the 16 indoor shelters, we have two tent cities. Tent City 3 operates mainly on west side of Lake Washington, and Tent City 4 on the east side. Tent City 3 started in 2000. Tent City 4 started in 2004. And Share also operates a work for housing program, a storage locker program, and you know, and Wheel, which Tracy can tell you all about, operates the women's winter shelter program.
Tracy, yes. Once again, thanks for having us. I currently work for Wheel's winter women's shelter, and we have approximately 35 to 45 women a night that come in just for shelter for the night. And we are closing on April 15th. Right now, there's a real lack of women's shelter in the King County area. And we're trying to get more of that out there for the women year round, not just during the winter months. I've lived at Tent City 3 for almost 2 years, and it's been an experience, a good experience for me. I'm very active in the Share Network. On the Share side, and also Wheel is my employer at the shelter right now. We're just trying to get the awareness out there of the need for shelter, and our what we say, without shelter, people die. And it's a very real statement. And so we've been pushing the Occupy CHKC, which is the Committee on Homelessness in King County, to provide more shelter beds. And we started a little bit over a year ago with that campaign, and they're starting to come around and listen to us. They, at first, you know, it's been a rough fight. And in the last year, we've seen them go from not talking about tent cities to actually asking questions now about tent cities. And basically, until they get the housing built, Tent City 3 is the most cost-effective, viable interim shelter. We can house 100 people for cheap, 100 people a night, cheaper than what it is in a shelter bed. And so we're really trying to spread the word and get the word out there that tent cities do need to exist. There is a need for them, and that we can effectively shelter 100 people a night, and for as long as need be.
All right, George, tell us about Nicholsville.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Good morning. Nicholsville is kind of on the same lines as Tent City 3 and 4. The difference is they're more of temp permanent camp. They've been at the site they're at for about 2 years now. It'll be 2 years, May 13th. We are a self-managed camp. And one of the problems that we've been having at Nicholsville, unlike Tent City 3 and 4, we are not permitted. We do not have a permit where we're at, so that leaves us without police protection. Anytime we've had a problem there and called in the police, unless it's something like an actual assault or something in that degree, the police say You guys are just squatting here. We can't do nothing. If we're going to take this person, we have to take all of you. So that is one thing that we're trying to get the city council to do, is recognize us so that we can have police protection. And different than Tent City 3 or 4, our goal is up to 350 people. And it's with simple sleeping sturdy structures, which is about 120 square foot area. It's kind of like a fancy tool shed. People can have a little bit more privacy and a little more shelter from the wind and the rain. They have about 16 now, and so we're a long ways from our goal, but that is some of the things that we are fighting to get at this meeting on the board meeting on the 24th, which we're asking people to show up to and support us. Also, I did say that. Their goal is 350 people instead of 100. So, thanks, Mike.
And my understanding of the both the tent cities and Nicholsville is these are grassroots citizens' responses to the problem at hand.
Yes, that's correct.
Yes, yeah, both tent cities and Nicholsville, they're all self-managed, really. It's the people that are staying in those encampments, Tent City 3, Tent City 4, and Nicholsville are, has to operate the encampment themselves, so they're all self-managed. And so everyone that is in the encampments has to participate in not only running the encampments effectively, but also to, advocate for ourselves. We're basically meeting our own survival needs. There is a severe lack of shelter in Seattle and King County. There's about 8,000 homeless people every night in Seattle and King County, and there's roughly just around 2,500 shelter beds. The recent one night count found 2,736 homeless people sleeping outside without shelter, sleeping in green belts and doorways and alleys, buses, bus stops, and cars. So, so the shelter system is not able to provide for everybody. And, when they did that one night count, 455 winter shelter beds were available at that time, and that goes away on May 31st. So, there's, as if the problem wasn't big enough, they need to, keep those shelters open.
And I think something that really struck home for a lot of people was when they were doing the one-night count, one of the teams found a woman that had passed away due to hypothermia. And they found her when they were doing the one-night count. And it reiterates the need for the shelter. It's very sad. Without shelter, people die.
So it sounds like there's, in King County, there's at least 5,000 people going without shelter every night.
Yes, when they did the one-night count, they found 2,736 people, which I think is a 5% increase over last year.
And that's just in a limited geographic area. We do not count everybody. We just count little areas that we can compare from year to year. So it's always an undercount.
Yeah. So basically, those are just the people that was found. I think everyone knows that there's a lot more out there. That, like I said, those are the people that has been seen visibly during the one-night count between the hours of 2 a.m. and 5 a.m. in the morning.
And as you mentioned at a recent forum, George, the relative cost for the tent cities is pretty friggin' economical compared to other facilities locally.
Yeah, we figure it's about $3 a night per person at a tent city, where your other shelters like DESC is $40 a night per person.
All right, so Elizabeth, in addition to all the people that are in shelters and the winter shelters that are about to close, potentially close, there's also a lot of people living in cars. Can you talk about that and the program you're a part of?
Yes. Across the area, about 30% of the people who are unsheltered are living in cars. That's the largest group of unsheltered people. In some parts of the county, it's up above 50% who are living in vehicles of some sort. The people who are living in oversized vehicles are restricted to areas that are industrial zones. So areas of Seattle like Ballard and Soto have some areas where people are packed in pretty tight. And the more we have no parking 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. signs going up, the less place they have to be. It's a very difficult thing. Some cities have put together some really good programs. Santa Barbara has a program that's been going for quite some time now. And I spoke with their executive director last week, and she said that it's costing them an average of $220 per person served per year, which is really economical. Of course, that does not include the cost for the people of keeping gas in the car and keeping the car running. So you bear that in mind, that is a significant cost as well. But for the city, this has been an economical way of helping people to stay in their vehicles. And there are a lot of good reasons why people like to be in vehicles. It gives them some private space. It gives them some protection, not only from the elements, but from the rest of society. They don't get kicked in the head while they're sleeping at night. And it's transportation. If you've got a job, it often helps to have transportation of your own. Many of the people that I've run into in the Ballard area are tradespeople. And so they need a safe place to keep their tools so that when they have work, they have those tools with them. That's much more difficult if you're, well, practically impossible if you're in a shelter and you have to schlep everything around all the time. So the tent cities give community, which is really important for people. What we've been trying to do with the Safe Parking Program in Seattle, which is just a little pilot project, still kind of getting off the ground, is to put together, in starting out in faith community parking lots, 3 to 5 spaces where people can stay. Some sites just overnight, but most sites they can stay there through the day if they need to, particularly if you get sick, you know, you don't want to move your car. And this gives them some sense of safety in numbers, and there's case management attached to the sites so that people can get help to get from their vehicle into housing. And so far we've had really pretty good record of getting people into housing, particularly families. We have prioritized getting families into housing. At the moment, there are 7 parking spaces that are managed by Compass Housing Alliance. There are a couple more that will be coming on very soon under Compass Housing Alliance doing the case management. And we have one site that's at University Congregational UCC Church, where the case management is voluntary, and they have 4 parking spaces. We're full, and we have waiting lists. There is a tremendous need out there. There were 878 people in vehicles in the one night count. That's quite a large chunk of the homeless, unsheltered population.
Right. And those are just the ones you found.
Those are just the ones we found. Yeah. Mostly people try to stay as hidden as possible, particularly about half of our homeless population are families, and they really try to stay hidden. If you're living in a vehicle with your children, there's the fear that if you're found, the social services people will split your family up, take the kids. I don't think that's the intention of the social services people, but that sometimes is the outcome. If you go into a shelter, it's difficult for families to stay together.
And again, even with the protection of a vehicle, there's still, with the exception of your pilot program, there's still no access to a bathroom, to water, to
things we all take for granted. Those are major issues for people. We have a tremendous lack of public hygiene facilities in Seattle that allow people to feel human. We're making some progress, but there's still a tremendous issue there. And then there's the problem that you have to move every 72 hours within the city of Seattle. If you get parking tickets, they're expensive and they add up, and people are not in their vehicles because they have a lot of money. And if you get 4 tickets that you haven't been able to pay and you haven't gone to the court and made some arrangements, you're eligible to be booted. Once there's a boot on your car, you have about 48 hours to pay for the boot and all the tickets, or you risk getting towed into impound, and from there, if you can't make resolution fairly quickly, your car is sold at auction. Then you lose not only your shelter, but everything, often everything that's in it. We've been working on getting arrangements for people to get their stuff back, but in the meantime, often everything they have for identity proof is in that vehicle. Try to get any help without proof of identity. Big issue.
And a place to you touch on for people in the trades and automobiles, but obviously tent cities and Nicholsville provide a place to leave your stuff so that you can, you know, get a job and function in society.
Yes, correct. Absolutely. Yeah, it's not just both tent cities and car camps. Gives the people not only that the safety and survival that they need, which is the very basic, basically service or aspect of that community, is that safety and survival. But a lot of the indoor shelters do not provide flexibility to homeless people. Like Elizabeth was saying, a lot of the shelters that are available are nighttime shelters only, where people just basically get allowed to sleep, and then in the morning they get woken up sometimes as early as 6 o'clock in the morning, and basically they have to pack everything up and take everything with them. In the indoor shelters, a lot of times couples are not allowed to stay together. They're broken up. You know, men go on one side and the women to the other side. So in tent cities, couples are allowed to stay together. And like I said, that not only, you know, they provide that safety and survival, the flexibility, but that community, aspect of tent cities, you know, gives the people the support structure that's not present in their lives and gives them stability. To get them back on their feet.
I know for me, it's the big thing for me is safety. Women are especially vulnerable on the street. And in Tent City, we have a real strict code of conduct as far as, no violence. And the men are very respectful of the women. And I know that should somebody manage to get into Tent City and try to harm me, one of the advantages of living in a tent is that all I've got to do is yell, and men are going to come from men and women, actually. That's the biggest aspect for me. And then, the community, people look down on homeless people. The looks you get, you can't go into anywhere and ask to use the restroom, unless you're buying something. Well, we're homeless. We don't have a lot of money. And so the community there, we're all in the same boat. And we don't look down on each other. We're all equal. We all have the same say. You know, it's like we were saying earlier, democratic. You know, at the weekly camp meetings, you get to vote No rules are just automatically, boom, in place. They have to be motioned, seconded, and passed. And everything is discussed. It's a Democrat. It gives you a voice. It's a democratic society that gives you a voice. And in a tent city, one vote does make a difference. So I have a say in rules that are going to govern me, and the leadership is going to govern me in this camp. I'm safe. You contribute. Everybody has their requirements to contribute. You know, the security shifts. You can be a part of the executive committee, which actually runs the camp. I've actually found my voice since coming to Tent City, because I am homeless and it's a cause I believe in. And so when I get the chance, yes, I do speak out about it, and I go to meetings and try to be heard. You know, being homeless is not one of the greater thrills of my life, but I've done things since I've been homeless that I never would have done if I wasn't. I have spoken to the city council. I've met city council members. I've spoken before the governing board of the Committee on Homelessness in King County. I've spoken to the county council doing this interview. It's an opportunity to be heard.
I think what Tracy is trying to say, you know, like the self-managed aspect of our communities, you know, not only provides that safety, but enhances our dignity homeless people generally, there is a stigma associated with being homeless. And, you know, sometimes when you're already down in your luck, you tend to buy into that, instead of fighting it. But, you know, when you become homeless, it's not just loss of housing, like people think, but it's oftentimes you lose your dignity and you lose your self-respect. And, you know, getting over that issue for a lot of us has been the challenge. A self-managed and democratic community like Tent Cities, you know, gives you that having to participate and having a say in what goes on and you know, gives back your dignity to you. And that's why we're out here. Currently there's a lack of political will to recognize encampments and car camps as a viable interim solution to the lack of shelter and affordable housing in Seattle and King County, which is an enigma to us because, you know, like I said earlier, Tent City 3 started in 2000. You know, Tent City 4 started 2004. Nicholsville, you know, they've been trying to find a semi-permanent location since they started about 4 years ago. You know, and, you know, no one's been hurt by our operations. That's why, you know, it's weird how we get so much opposition from the policymakers, where we're just trying to meet our own survival needs. We're not hurting anyone. We're not getting any funding. Basically just, you know, getting over a roof, providing a roof over our heads. It's, you know, and that community aspect that you belong to somebody, or you belong to a larger group. You know, for me, you know, I don't consider myself homeless anymore. I've basically, Tent City 3 is my home now, you know, and it's given me a purpose. I see the need out there. There's a great need out there. And there's this community who's trying to provide that safety and survival to everybody, to a lot of people. You know, there's the big gap. Like I said, 8,000 homeless people found on every given night in Seattle, King County, and less than 2,500 shelter beds available. And then they're closing the winter shelters. There's going to be more people, homeless people outside. You know, and that's why we're doing this. The Committee to End Homelessness in King County, they've had this 10-year plan to solve homelessness it's been going on for 6 years now, and, you know,
8 years.
Or 8 years now, yeah. And, you know, it's worse now. And at least at the last governing board meeting when we told them, you know, they're starting to recognize the need, and yet still they're not willing to recognize encampments as a viable interim solution. It's a low cost and effective, you know, alternative, given the great need out there. And that's why we're kind of doing this roadshow forums. And that's why we're out here, is we're trying to get people to support our efforts, for the longest time, you know, about about 2010, you know, the coalition of Share Real, Real Change and Nicholsville, you know, declared a state of emergency, you know, about homelessness in San Joaquin County, given the need and the huge gap, huge survival gap. But for the most part, you know, the community and homelessness, who's supposed to be addressing, you know, the policies that just the name itself, community and homelessness, you know, they're supposed to be addressing policies that, you know, that could potentially solve this issue. But, you know, they're failing to recognize or at least listen to what homeless people have to say. You know, we're trying to basically, like I said, meet our survival needs, and it works, and all we need is support. But instead, you know, they try to pass legislation that often hinders our progress, or, you know, as Nicholsville, like 2 years ago, the mayor was proposing to have to give Nicholsville or find Nicholsville a permanent site where, you know, there was discussion about the Sunny Jim site in Soto area, but the politicians didn't think it was a viable place, but it's still, well, where is a place. So they decided to go over there at the Duwamish River where they are currently, and they've been there going on 2 years now. And now they're being, you know, there's basically being threatened to disband again, and still no place to go. You know, I mean, we need support, you know, given the need out there, what we're doing is for ourselves, providing ourselves safety and survival. It's a good thing. And that's why we're trying to get people to support us at the governing board meeting. This is going to be on Wednesday, the 24th, April. It's going to be 8 a.m. at Bertha Landis room at City Hall. We're trying to get our supporters to meet with us at 7:30 a.m. between on 7th and Cherry Streets, and to so we can go together as a group. And we're trying to encourage, you know, like I said, this is the policymakers. We're trying to encourage them to recognize and support homeless tent cities, and then create safe zones and facilities for car campers, and also encourage them for a no net loss of winter shelters. Keep the winter shelters open year round.
I'd like to say that a show of support makes an impact on this group. I've definitely seen that in the last three meetings that we've gone to, the fact that there are people from the general public there who are standing with the homeless says a great deal to that group. They do take notice. It's very important. And I would also encourage people to come to the last of our three roadshow forums. That's going to be at People's Institutional Baptist Church, April 16th. That's a Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. The address is 159 24th Avenue. That's very near the Garfield High School.
All right.
And something else, the United Way recently announced that there's $1.2 million in funds that are going to be made available, but car camps and tent cities are not eligible for any of the money. And it just doesn't make sense because we are the most cost-effective way to go. You know,
people really need a place to be. That's part of being human, is just to have a place to be. I would love to see Seattle go beyond just having a few places for car campers on faith community property. I know that's the easiest way to get started, but we've already been approached by a business in Magnolia that would like to host a site. And for the people who are living in RVs, I keep hearing they really want to have a place where they can have access to electricity, to water, and to a safe place to dump their waste. Homeless encampments need some basic facilities. People living on the streets have the same needs as you and I, putting up porta potties in the summer only is kind of ridiculous. We have to pee and poop all year round. So we need some permanent public hygiene facilities. It would be nice to have some encampments for vehicle residents that will accommodate not only cars but RVs, and have some level of self-management so that the people who are just out there trying to survive can separate themselves from people who are using their vehicles for illegal activities. It's not nice to be parked next to somebody who has screaming and yelling around their vehicle in the middle of the night. And if you call the police will say, we have to enforce the rules equitably. So if you've been here for more than 32 hours, we're going to ticket everybody on the block. And then you just get a red flag, and you're much more likely to get more tickets, booted. It's a big risk for people. Mm-hmm. We need some safe places for people to be.
Unfortunately, we are out of time. We're going to have to end it there. I want to thank you, all four of you, for coming in and spending time with us this morning.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
You.